everybody. Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. And I'm here in the Progressive Radio Network studio, and I'm kind of excited. I started this show over 8 years ago, and I remember the first few episodes were really kind of nerve-wracking. The studio was in another building at the time, and I was all alone in this closed room, and I had never done a show before, and I was talking to myself, and I wasn't used to talking to myself out loud, and it took a while to get used to it and then to find my rhythm, and here I am over 8 years later, and we're now live streaming, so I can see myself. And I'm not alone anymore. I have myself to talk to right in front of me. This is really fun. So if you want to, you can not only hear the show, but see the show. And I've got this lovely background behind me, the blue ocean. And that makes me want to talk about where I just came from. So I just spent the last 2.5 weeks in the Bay Area and just came back to New York this morning on a red-eye flight, and I'm glad there's air conditioning in here to keep me cool and awake because I didn't get much sleep today. But it was a fantastic trip, and of course, there was lots of food involved, and I want to talk about that. And we've got some great guests coming in later today. We've got Michael Zuckman and Ethan Sment, the Vegan Mo's, and they've got this wonderful cookbook, NYC Vegan Iconic Recipes for Taste of the Big Apple. So we'll be talking about a lot of great New York vegan food shortly. But first, my last trip to the Bay Area. Now, you know I go there kind of frequently, and we have some favorite places that we visit. But this time we did some new things. The first thing I want to talk about is walking. We've been doing a lot more walking. When I say we, that's my partner, Gary, and I. And we've been walking an hour or two a day, and we happen to be staying in Palo Alto near Stanford University, where they have this wonderful dish trail. I'm not sure if you have heard about it or know about it, but it took us about an hour and 45 minutes, or maybe a little more, to go from where we were staying to the trail and back. And really lovely dry heat. And walking is really good for you. And something that kind of annoys me when I leave Manhattan, where I don't own a car and I walk everywhere, leave New York City, not just Manhattan, but all over New York City, and then go to California, where you can't seem to survive without a car. This trip, we did a lot of walking, and it made a tremendous difference. I feel really good. And one nice thing about a lot of exercise is you get really hungry, and then the food tastes so good when you get to eating. So let's talk about some food. One restaurant that we visited in the Palo Alto area, we had been there before. It's called Veggie Garden. It's a very unassuming place in a little strip mall. You don't expect anything from it. Well, this time it was amazing. I like what's called veggie duck, which is made from bean curd skin. Are you familiar with bean curd skin? It may not sound good when I describe it, but believe me, it's fantastic. So do you know when you cook milk and it gets a skin on the top? I don't know anybody who likes that skin, but if you cook soy milk, you get a skin on the top too, just like dairy milk. But some people got very clever about this skin, and they actually, I don't know how they do it, but they take the skin, they dry it out, and it becomes this chewy soy food that can be seasoned with anything. And a lot of these Asian restaurants now make different kinds of dishes with it, and a lot of them call it, some of them, veggie duck. But this one was unlike any I had ever had before. It was indescribable and fantastic. So if you're ever in the Bay Area in Palo Alto, please check out Veggie Garden and try the duck. Ba-dum-bump. Another one I wanted to mention is, maybe you've tried it. It's a chain. It's called Sweet Green. They seem to be in places where there are universities with students who want to eat well but quickly. So there are these fast food restaurants where they make salad, and there are some salad menus where it's a set number of ingredients, or you can make your own. So they pile all the ingredients in a big bowl and mix it up. But fantastic. I had this Thai watermelon salad with arugula and watermelon and blueberries and a pesto, vegan pesto. It was fantastic. And I find, especially when traveling, when you are in the mood for a big salad and you don't have an opportunity to make one yourself, it's sometimes it's hard to find a place that makes a fantastic salad. And we need to eat big salads every day. Why? Because we need to keep things moving. And fiber is what keeps things moving. Very good. Now, another thing, it's been hot. It was hot in California, and I'm sure it was hot here in New York, and hot in a lot of places, maybe not hot everywhere. But when it's hot, we need to hydrate. That means drink. Drink water or drink flavored water. And one thing that I've been doing is cold brewing different kinds of teas. Now, it could be caffeinated teas or not. And some of our recent favorites, especially when it's really hot, is Tea Chino. Have you tried Tea Chino? It's a grain beverage. Tastes like coffee. And it comes with some different flavors like hazelnut and vanilla. But when you brew it, and there's many different ways you could brew it, like coffee, you can brew it like tea, you could make up your own way to brew it. But then you chill it and add your favorite non-dairy milk, like a vanilla almond or something. It's fantastic. It's a frappuccino or whatever those fancy ice drinks are with the rich milks and the coffee. Only it has no caffeine. And of course it has none of that animal stuff in it. And then another one I like to make is hibiscus. Now, I'm lucky because I have a friend who lives in Costa Rica, and she grows hibiscus. And whenever she comes here or whenever I go there, I get a big bag of dried hibiscus leaves. But I know that I could buy them just about anywhere. But you can brew them. And if you add dried fruit while you're brewing it, like raisins and other dried fruit, it's sweet. And it makes a really wonderful, cold, refreshing drink for summer. I wish I had some right now. But I just flew in and I haven't had time to make anything, so we'll have to take care of that later. And I noticed during this trip, especially because it was so hot, do you feel this way? When it's hot, you don't really want to have cooked food. You want to have cool food, wet food like fruits, and juicy foods. I said wet foods. I kind of meant juicy foods. That sounds better, doesn't it? Well, we like to go to a place called the Vegetarian House in San Jose. And I like to call it our home away from home. It's an Asian-style restaurant, but they have a huge menu and everything's vegan. The service is fantastic. They're there to be kind and compassionate. And we have our typical favorites, and I wasn't in the mood for any of them. We usually go for this really big soup that has all of these bizarre things in it. I don't even know what they are, but they're chewy and tasty and good. And then this big cabbage salad, heavenly salad, which is fantastic. I didn't want that. They have some raw vegan dishes, and I went for the spicy Thai wrap, which was a collard roll. And it was filled with cabbage and carrots and bell peppers and mint and an almond sauce and I think there was coconut noodles in there, but it didn't list that on the menu. So maybe it was something new. Whatever, it was fantastic. And when it's hot and you want something juicy and hydrating, it's great to have these kinds of foods. Hmm. And then, I love talking about food. And it's kind of fun to remember all of these things that we had. We invited the boss over for dinner. And what do you do when the boss is coming over for dinner? You make meatloaf, right? We have a meatloaf recipe that we use this whole grain base made from red rice, black rice, millet, and Tyrannicum, which some people call Kamut, and a variation of it is Faro. So these four different grains, and they come together and make a really lovely texture, a chopped meat-like texture, only it's a plant-chopped meat, a plant meat. And the colors come together really nicely, too. You have the black forbidden rice gives a purpliness, and the red rice is red, obviously, and the millet looks like little bits of gristle, if you would. And the farro, or the kamut, is kind of crunchy and chewy. And when they all come together, they make a fantastic meatloaf. We have this recipe at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Check it out. Make it with Gary's spicy marinara and serve it to your boss. Everybody loves it. They'll go for seconds. So, moving on, my very favorite recipe that I want to talk about is my raw fruit tart. Now, last year, I came up with a recipe. I'm waving because my guests are here, and they're welcome to come in at any time. I made this raw fruit custard tart last year. It had a gluten-free crust and a cashew custard topped with berries. It's fantastic. But I needed to make a dessert for someone who didn't want sugar in the dessert. I could use date puree. So I came up with a new version of this, and it's better than anything. I can't believe it, and I would really love you to try it because it's fantastic. I made it twice in 1 week for different parties that we went to. Let me tell you what it is. The crust, I don't know if you've ever made raw desserts, the crust is typically made from dried fruit and nuts. So I combined raisins with pecans and almonds. Now, I added one more secret ingredient. So in my original fruit tart, and if you've ever had a classic fruit tart, vegan or not, typically on top of the crust is a layer of chocolate. And the chocolate's there to kind of seal the crust so that the custard doesn't soften the crust too much. Now, I wasn't going to do that with the raw pie, but I wanted that chocolate flavor. And I added cacao nibs with the raisins, pecans, and almonds. And I didn't know how it was going to come out. But let me tell you, it was better than anything I ever imagined. And then the filling was cashews with date puree and topped with fresh berries. It looks fantastic. It's beautiful. Anyone can make this. And I hope you try it. That's my gift for you. Well, shall we bring on my guests here? They're here. Why not? Let's take advantage of them. I got these two nice-looking guys here in the studio with me, and I'm going to introduce them. We've got, I hope I pronounce your names right. I'm just going to say your first names. Michael Zuckman.
Suchman.
It's a soft CH, like such.
Exactly.
Évidemment, Suchman. Okay, and you are such a man.
Exactly.
Right?
Because he's vegan.
Okay, well, we're going to learn a lot more about them, but just briefly reading their little bios. Michael has been hooked on cooking since the age of 7 and believes he becomes his true self when he's in the kitchen. Michael believes passionately in vegan food as activism. He's a certified vegan life coach and educator through the Main Street Vegan Academy. He's also a certified food for life instructor through the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And Michael is a recovering lawyer. Yes. We'll talk a little bit about that too. Having practiced in the field of corporate litigation for 12 years, he is also an accomplished photographer whose work can be seen in private collections in New York, Palm Beach, and Los Angeles. Woo! Michael, nice. And Ethan Cement.
Got it.
Love that name, Cement.
Thank you.
I'm just going to digress for a moment because when I think of cement, I got a master's in chemical engineering and my thesis was on the hydration of cement.
Wow.
I don't remember.
That's with a C.
I don't. I know it's spelled differently, and I know I spelled your name wrong when we were communicating.
Oh, that's okay.
But cement. Yeah. Anyway, that's what it made me think of, and I don't remember any of that thesis that I wrote. But let's talk about Ethan now. He's a podiatric surgeon in private practice in New York City. He's a fellow of the American College of Foot and Ankle Orthopedics and Medicine. Ankle. I said ankle. I don't know why I said that. Ethan is the founder and director of the Chelsea Foot and Ankle Center. There's ankle again. Yeah. In Manhattan, where I probably have ankle issues, and maybe we can talk about that
later.
But he treats the entire spectrum of foot and ankle medicine and surgery. Raised in an Orthodox Jewish family and coming from a long line of kosher butchers, Ethan woke up in his late 30s to the realities of animal exploitation when caring for his ailing dog, Chandler. Having discovered the health benefits of a plant-based diet, Ethan decided to go fully vegan. He now actively promotes the health benefits of a plant-based vegan diet to his patients. Nice.
Yeah.
Ethan serves on the board of directors of Woodstock Farm Sanctuary, an organization that is near and dear to his heart. And they live in Brooklyn with their two neurotic but lovable vegan dogs, Riley yes. and Charlie.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for coming in on this lovely hot day in New York.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking, not just yet, but about NYC Vegan. Wait a minute, how do I get that here? Anyway, yeah. iconic recipes for a taste of the Big Apple. Okay, we're going to get to this. This is a very fun book.
Thank you.
And as I mentioned before, I don't know if you heard this, but I just flew in from the Bay Area on a red eye. I haven't really been asleep yet, so I'm just like running.
Is this
running.
That circled last night for an hour before it landed at 3 in the morning?
No.
Because that's what happened to our associate who came in from the Bay Area last night.
No, we were on JetBlue, no problem.
He was treating patients this morning.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm glad I wasn't one of those patients. Yeah, but it's going to be hard for me to talk about these foods because I'm going to get very hungry very quickly. So, veganism, vegan food, it's not just a cuisine, okay? There's a lot of stuff behind being vegan. And I love when I go into so many of the vegan restaurants, the owners are full of love and committed, and they're on a mission. It's unlike any other kind of cuisine. We have a message.
Absolutely.
And we all have stories that brought us to this place, okay? So I need to hear your stories. And let's start with you, Michael Suchman.
Correct, but actually it makes more sense to start with Ethan because
he
started the journey.
Okay, so we'll start with Ethan.
Yeah.
Because we'd be starting at chapter 2 rather than having chapter 1.
Yes. Now, before we start, well, let's just make a disclaimer.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to be talking a little bit about religion. And I've said many times on this show that I am not a religious person. I was raised Jewish. But, you know, I don't want to offend anyone here. And this is all about love. We're tuning in love. And, you know, we love everyone and whatever they believe in. But we all have our unique experiences.
Yep.
And let's go.
All three of us raised Jewish. So,
L'chaim.
L'chaim is right.
Okay.
Our journey, I guess, began with me going on a much-needed health kick. I was about 42 pounds heavier than I am, and I was on a statin for high cholesterol, and I was in my late 30s and doing everything that the standard American diet leads you to. And I eventually got to a place where I was feeling sick all the time. I wasn't doing well. A friend of mine got in touch with me, actually the vegan drag queen, Honey LeBronx. I've known Ben for years. Mm-hmm. And he said, hey, you know, I saw that you're going on this Weight Watchers kick, which I announced with a bunch of friends on Facebook. We were doing it like sort of competitively. He said, you know, I've been doing things a little vegetarian. You might want to look into this. I read this really interesting book, and it was The Face on Your Plate, The Truth About Food by Jeffrey Masson. And I read it. And I closed it, and I said to Michael, I'm a vegetarian. Now, I had lapsed in and out of vegetarianism throughout my life. But the more I started learning, I never did it for any reason other than I thought I was doing something good for the animals and for my health. And then the more I realized, like, wow, aquaculture, what's that? What's a factory farm? I'd never heard of a factory farm. Mm-hmm. And so I started to really learn. And the more I learned, the more I started to open my eyes and wake up and realize I couldn't look away from what I knew. And so one thing led to another, And I basically, by Thanksgiving that year, within 6 months, I had already dropped the 42 pounds. And it wasn't really the Weight Watchers as much as the plant-based diet. And I basically said to Michael, you know, if I can do Thanksgiving, my favorite holiday of the year, if I can do this vegan, I can do anything vegan. Mm-hmm. And so we had gone up to his family's family gathering up in Westchester every year like we normally do. And I just sort of picked up the salad, and I think everyone thought I was still doing Weight Watchers. And we had actually made an entire vegan roast back at home. It was a tofurkey with all this other stuff. And long story short, made the meal, and I said to Michael at the end of it, that's it. I'm doing it. I'm vegan. And Woo! That's when things got a little bit interesting.
Yeah,
right?
That's when we became a mixed marriage. And I think, like, everybody who, when they first wake up, they want everyone else around them to wake up to.
Yeah. Don't you get it?
Exactly. And it's all coming from a great place, and it happens to everybody. But as you learn, when you start pushing someone and pushing someone, you're pushing them away. So I just kept resisting and resisting, even though I, in my heart of hearts, I knew everything Ethan was saying was absolutely true, because there's no way this chicken breast got on my plate without a chicken having been killed.
Yeah, and a lot more than that.
And a lot more than that. That was probably the best portion of the chicken's existence was, okay, at least no more suffering and pain right now.
Yeah.
But I still dug my heels in, you're not going to tell me what to do. And then I was home one day watching Oprah, as one does, and she had Kathy Freston on.
Oh,
and
lovely.
She talked about being a flexitarian and leaning into veganism and start with Meatless Mondays. So I was like, okay, that I'm willing to do. So I did Meatless Mondays for a couple weeks, and if it was one of those Mondays where I forgot what day it was and I accidentally had some animal product, I'd get really upset and I'd do it the next day. But once I was really able to do it consistently, I added on Tofu Tuesdays and then Vegetable Wednesdays, Tempeh Thursdays, Fruit Fridays, till I got all 7 days. And I didn't say a word to Ethan about this. And we were at a friend's birthday party down in Asbury Park, New Jersey. And we knew that there would be nothing there that Ethan would choose to eat because there'd be nothing vegan, and there'd be nothing there I would choose to eat because it was mostly just like going to be chips and cookies, and, which, hey, I'm a big fan of, but not really what I was wanting. We knew there was a pizza place nearby that had a full vegan menu. So we decided after the party, we'll go over there, get dinner. So we sat down, looked at the menu. Ethan said, do you know what you're going to have? I said, well, I know what I would want to get, but I know what I'm ordering. I ordered off the vegan menu, and at the end of the meal, I looked at Ethan and said, that's it. I'm vegan. It's been 7 days. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd say it probably took about
no idea.
18 months or so from start to finish for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely more of a gradual process, but that's, as Ethan knows, that's how I tend to approach things.
Yeah,
so.
And I'm more of a, I sit there and think about it, and then when I make a commitment, boom, I'm done.
Beautiful.
Yeah, we're different, but we got the same place.
Yeah. So since you went through this transition journey, I assume that you support the messages and there are different groups out there. You mentioned flexitarian. Mm-hmm. Now we have reducitarian and Meatless Mondays. There's all these different, not quite there.
Right.
But it helps you get there, right?
Exactly. I'd rather someone at least be vegan one day a week than no days a week.
Yeah.
Or if you can do it 7 days a week before 6 o'clock, that's better than no days a week before 6 o'clock. So every little bit does help the animals.
Yeah.
Ideally, I'd love it to be 7 days a week, 24 hours a day.
We have a lot of polarization going on in the country with our government
what
and
are you
politics.
We do.
Yeah, we do. And but it also lends itself to veganism, too, because
sure.
there are the abolitionists, and they don't want to. They don't think that these transition steps are the right way to promote the message.
Yeah.
I think anything works.
Yeah. I mean, I think different things work for different people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've certainly, it's taken me a long time in, it took me easily the first 10 years of my practice to realize that everything I was taught in med school and residency and all my training it doesn't necessarily work the same way in everybody because we are all in very meaningful ways different. And I think that applies to the way that our brains work and the way that our psyches work. And we all have very different ways of integrating information, patterning behaviors. And when it comes to something like that, I think that certain things are going to reach someone like me that won't reach someone like Michael versus maybe the flip side, right? So there are people for whom flexitarianism, let's say, is something that like Michael could embrace and say, yeah, this is the way I'm going to sort of lean into this. But that wasn't his end goal. His end goal was to say, could I do more? Can I do more? And so as long as these, I hate to call them half measures because they're not. I think of them as first steps, right? As long as that's what they are and they're not an end goal, then I'm good with whatever it takes to get people to go there because life patterns are hard and these are really deeply seated things. But as it pertains to sort of messaging in the community and like, are you a welfarist or are you an abolitionist? Well, I have yet to meet somebody who identifies as a welfarist who is not wholly for the abolition of animals. But that's sort of like, you know, coming to a negotiation and saying, I want everything now. And if you don't give me that, I don't want any of it. And anyone who's ever had to do a negotiation knows that it's not exactly the most strategic way to get things to work. And I'm certainly not calling out the abolitionists because I personally identify as one. I also identify as a welfarist. And that pisses off my abolitionist friends. But the reality is that I think that you know, there's room for all of this to exist because there is such diversity within the human family and different things work for different people.
I'm digressing again, but I'm just thinking, I played Cinderella in the musical Into the Woods, and she sings this song on the steps of the palace. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but she comes to this, like, epiphany. And so as the prince is pursuing her, and she doesn't know, does she want to go off with the prince or does she, you know, who is she? She's a nobody. She should stay with her stepsister and her stepmother, whatever. And she ultimately decides not to decide. And I thought, that's where I'm at. I'm deciding not to decide here between one or the other. I know what I am, and I'm a vegan all the way, okay? Right. But and I will promote it in the best way I can, in the most loving, non-judgmental, compassionate way. so I believe in both, I guess.
I think, as Ethan was saying, when the end goal, I think everyone will agree the end goal is stop using animals. So I think when it comes to welfare and people start to say, well, you know, I don't want the animals to suffer, at least you're now getting them to think that the animals have feelings. They're going to be hurting. If you don't want them to hurt, well, okay, that's a good first step. Now let's take the next step.
And when the food's so good,
right.
I'm shaking you all. When the food's so good, when it's plant food, it's really good. Yeah. You don't need to eat the animals, right?
That's true.
Well, what are you putting on animals to make them taste good anyway? Plants.
Exactly. Herbs and spices and sauces and
It's true.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad you're doing all of this.
Thank you.
I want to dig into this book in a minute, but can we just pull the camera back, broader picture, connect the dots?
I'm like, I don't know, it's me on camera today.
There's no camera guy here.
It's like human hair day.
Veganism is about treating all life with dignity and respect, no exploitation. So exploitation is all around us in so many different ways. And I know that you've experienced it in your life. And so how does that mix with your choice to be vegan? I just want to say, and I don't know if you've experienced this, but I was raised Jewish and I was in Hebrew school. It was the first place I experienced discrimination as a woman. Because I was in a conservative synagogue, and all the boys in Hebrew school who weren't very good students, they got all the honors and all the privileges and all the special prayers, and I didn't. Yeah. I didn't get that.
Yeah, I get that. I understand that.
Yeah,
I get that deeply. I've experienced discrimination. I'm raised Orthodox Jewish. I used to wear a yarmulke as I was a kid, everywhere going out. And so, I mean, it's very obvious when someone doesn't like you out. And, you know, back then, suburban Maryland wasn't what it is today where I grew up. And so there were plenty of people who would scream out of a car if we were walking home from synagogue on a Saturday, you know, dirty Jew and things like that. And, you know, my parents told me what happened to them when they were kids and how they were discriminated against. I mean, so I think I was well prepared growing up that way, that when I came out at 20 as gay, I realized that, like, hey, you know, I'm old hat at this. And it's different. And that's the thing that I've realized, you know, there's a lot of talk now about intersectional advocacy mm-hmm. within the movement. And I think that's great because I think we are stronger together and that all the different oppressed groups and all the disenfranchised groups advocating for each other, being allies to each other is great. I think it's important for us to understand, though, that it's not quite ever the same. So I can advocate for you as a woman, and I'm proudly feminist and pro-women's rights, mm-hmm. but I don't actually understand what it's like because I have white male privilege. I mean, that's just different. Same way I couldn't, yep. you know, advocate for, you know, Black Lives Matters in knowing exactly what that feels like, but I know what it's similar to. And so, like, the discrimination I've experienced in my life in terms of anti-Semitism is similar to the discrimination of homophobia, but it's not the same. Mm-hmm. Just like I'm sure that the experience of speciesism, which none of us experience, we have no idea what that's like, but I imagine that that's also quite different.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, for me, growing up in northern Westchester, the neighborhood my parents first moved into actually had anti-Semitic covenants in the neighborhood bylaws. We were like maybe the third Jewish family in the neighborhood. It's like, you know, they're not enforced. We're like, well, then we need to get rid of them.
Wow.
You know, and I remember
they did.
I remember being on the school bus in first grade in the mid-70s, and someone who was several years older than I was on his way to Hebrew school, and there were kids in the back of the bus teasing him, oh, you have to go to Jew school now. And I was like, wow. And it's just kind of this, what's wrong with that? You know, it's this shame for just being Jewish. I'm like, I didn't quite understand, why would someone do that?
Well, I think what we're all discovering now is we had a few decades where things seemed to be politically correct and everyone was polite, but we didn't know that there was all of this.
The underlying rage was still there.
Racism and sexism and all kinds of
hate.
Hate. Mm-hmm. Just hate. Brewing and stewing. And now it's release.
Absence of love.
Lack of acceptance.
Yes.
Yes. And anyway, I think veganism is the healer of everything.
It's kind of the culmination of it all, isn't it? Just
yeah.
I agree with our friend David always says, vegan is love. He always says that. And I think it really is.
And that's what we're doing here at It's All About Food. We tune in love, just in case you forgot. I wanted to remind you, okay, let's talk about food.
Awesome.
The name of this show is called It's All About Food. It's my favorite subject. And I made some notes here. Okay. So there's lots of wonderful recipes, and basically they're based on New York City favorites.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That you veganized.
Yep.
Fantastic. So there are some things I want to just pick out that I thought were fun.
Sure.
Rice paper.
Yes.
Now, you know, you don't think about New York City when you say rice paper, but my partner Gary and I, we first discovered the wonders of rice paper, not just in a summer roll. Mm-hmm. When I read, I interviewed Roberto Martin, who wrote the cookbook Vegan Cooking for Carnivores. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Kathy Freston before on Oprah. He was the chef for Ellen.
Oh,
DeGeneres.
Okay. That's why I knew the name.
Yeah. And during their moment when they were vegan, now they're something close,
no,
I guess. Whatever. But it's okay. We're not into names and labels.
No.
And Oprah was coming over. So he made this fried chicken kind of dish, and he wrapped whatever it was, Gardein or whatever he was using, with the rice paper and made a skin. Mm-hmm. And we've been like going crazy with that ever since. I mean, that's our skin, our go-to skin. But you make ham with it.
Yes.
Definitely have to try that.
Yeah, there was a big trend, I guess, about a year or 2 years, 2 years ago, that people were suddenly discovering you could make bacon out of rice paper. I was like, okay, well, what if I pulled that back a couple steps, can you do a ham with it? And yes, you yes. can. Just
Jewish ham. Jewish
actually,
ham.
You can.
Exactly.
What do you know from ham?
Hey, my grandmother once served a pork roast on Rosh Hashanah, so there you go.
So I always tell people, I grew up as a double espresso and he was a decaf soy latte.
But yeah, so it's just kind of this interesting discovery that, yeah, you can do this, and it gives you the same mouthfeel and taste that you're looking for.
Yeah, it. Everybody has their own cultural experiences from home, and my mom would never make a ham, but she'd make bacon. I don't know what the logic was there, but there obviously was something somewhere. Right. Okay, next thing that came out is the brisket.
Oh. Yes.
So tell me, is your brisket amazing?
It's ridiculous. And I can say that because it's Michael's brisket, and it won me over.
Yeah, I mean, this was, I figured out how to make a vegan version of my mom's brisket, because this was, I think, as in most Jewish households, come the high holidays, here's your brisket.
Yep.
And I realized it's really all about the gravy.
Sure.
Once you can master the gravy, throwing in the protein, a seitan, is an easy sub for a brisket.
Now, for those who don't know what a brisket is,
it's basically a Jewish pot roast, the way I like to describe it to people.
It's a very soft meat that's soaking in all of this.
It's just cooked for hours and hours till it
sauce.
Is falling apart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I figured out how to make the gravy on its own. And once I was able to do that, like, okay, seitan's the easy sub in, just season it properly, and voila, brisket.
What does mom think?
My mom is not a fan of seitan in general.
Okay.
As she likes to call it, tastes like erasers.
She's a very expressive woman.
Yes, she is. But as far as the gravy goes, she couldn't tell the difference. And people who have had my brisket pre-vegan and now vegan, the sauce, you cannot tell the difference.
Okay. Next. Okay, we've obviously had some sort of similar paths here. Many people have, but cream spinach. That was the only way you could eat spinach back in the day.
Yeah, my mom, again, was buying the frozen bird's eye cream spinach.
Oh, I loved it.
And then she would full.
See, I didn't like it because when my mom got it, she took it frozen and she just put it into a pot and boiled it with water.
Thinned it down. It had to be rich and creamy.
See, my mom would, because there wasn't enough dairy in it already, she'd have to add more butter and sour cream.
As she is apt to do.
But yeah, so I was like, okay, yeah, you can still do cream spinach, but surprisingly, you don't need actual dairy cream.
That's right.
Very true.
And what's in yours? I don't remember off the top of my head.
Off the top of my head, I don't remember this. Okay. Remember, the recipes went to print back in December is like the last time we actually made any edits to the book. So.
And we've been really lazy with this because now that we actually have a published cookbook, we can actually just go
look back to the book and say, "Oh, where?"
It's so lovely to have a book in the kitchen. Finally,
I was going to ask you. So, we have a nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, and we have a lot of recipes there, and we have an app. And in the morning, when I want to make waffles or pancakes, I just go to our app and I look up one of my recipes.
It's awesome.
It's like all these.
It's so amazing.
I would say of the recipes in the book, I would say between the two of us have 90% of them committed to memory.
At this
now
point,
they're gone. It's in print. I can just.
Yeah, we're aging. I'm like, I got to hold on to those brain cells for other things.
There's limited storage capacity. So.
Well, too, I imagine when you cook and you like to cook, you probably don't really follow recipes a lot. Make them up as
that
they
was kind of the interesting thing with coming up with the book was so many of these recipes were ones that we've done forever.
Right.
That's like, you don't really think about it. It's like, you just throw in some. A little bit. Oh, need more of.
That's how my grandmother used to cook. My Hungarian grandmother used to, like, when I'd watch her bake particularly, things were done by, like, how much flour are you using? And she'd grab her hand, she'd scoop it out, she'd go, that's too much. And then she'd shake her hand out, she goes, that's right. And it was all done by feel.
Yeah.
And so, like, you really knew what you were doing.
But for a lot of people today who don't know where their kitchens are.
Yes.
Yes.
They need exact measurements and descriptions.
And so we gave it.
Our publisher would not have been happy if we just said, put some of this in.
Although you did that with one. You did that with the egg cream.
The egg cream, yes, there is. That we have
good memory.
Well done. There is a big disclaimer on that recipe. It said, this is the one recipe that does not actually have sizes. It's done purely by the size of your glass.
That's true.
I do. I read every book when I have people on the show. And I did read it. Okay. So the next one, favorite, all-time favorite, is the pot pie. Now, when I grew up, it was the Swanson's
pot pie? The Swanson's frozen pot pies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I never grew up on pot pie. Michael did.
Oh, they weren't kosher.
They weren't kosher.
Right.
No, this was your parents going out.
No, it's okay. I can enjoy it now.
This was your parents. Parents going out for dinner on Saturday night with friends. So here's your dinner. Throw it in the oven. The timer goes off when it's ready. It's like, oh, that was an easy one to make vegan. Just some frozen veggies, because that's all it was, and your choice of protein, and make a quick gravy, and store-bought puff pastry. Really easy.
That's the
trick.
I like to make my own crust.
I do when I bake.
Yeah. Ethan is the baker, so he is the crust maker for things. So when I first started doing this, to me, it was puff pastry.
Wow. Yeah. Fantastic.
It's one of those accidentally vegan products.
Right. Is there, probably not anymore, but did they put hydrogenated oil in puff pastries and things
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Yeah. I'm sure they did.
Yeah. I remember I lived in France for 4 years in the early 90s, and I never met another vegetarian, let alone vegan. Mm-hmm. Okay. But in the freezer section, they had vegan croissant that you could bake in the oven.
Amazing.
But yeah, they had hydrogen oil in them, and I didn't care.
Yeah. I mean,
we didn't know have croissant.
We didn't know that. No.
Don't eat it every day, but enjoy it when you do.
Okay. Latkes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Potato pancakes, folks, everybody. Yep. This is a very important dish.
So this is my Hungarian side of the family. Mm. My everything's potato. I mean, by the time I was 8, I was probably 75% potato. I mean, everything was always potato in the family. And between that or the potatoes paprikash, those were both my Hungarian grandmother's recipes. And she passed it on to my mom. And you know, latkes are typically done around Hanukkah, the holiday, where a lot of fried foods, everything, they try to cook with oil because of the miracle that happened with oil, blah, blah, blah. And our family liked to do it on Passover because these were kosher for Passover. Because you're not using flour, you're not you can use matzo meal, and it comes together pretty nicely. And my biggest issue in making this was that when I first started doing a one-for-one with it, they ended up coming out like hash browns that were fried because they weren't really holding together. I didn't have a good binder. And then after like resisting like the vegan egg and all these other binders, Michael's like, why don't you just try it? It works. It's been around. I'm like, yeah, I should probably do that. And sure enough, it works perfectly.
Yes.
Tastes the same.
Okay. Very important. There, I have memories in Hebrew school where they had all the kids grating with the hand graters, the potatoes and the onions.
This was
a battle in our home, and when he was going to make it once with the.
I grew up. You put them through the food processor.
I was taught,
if
your knuckles aren't bleeding, you haven't done it right. And my grandmother used to watch. The first time I think it was my mom tried to use it. Processors were new back in the 80s or something, and she was going to use one. And my grandmother said, it's okay, I guess it'll come out okay. You know, the typical Hungarian, But the truth is, when you use the processor, and if you overprocess it, it actually can get very watery, and then your ratios get off a little bit, and then you end up having to put in a little bit more of the thickener, like the matzo meal or something like that.
It's not the same.
It is not the same.
It's not the same.
And it's because of the love you put into it. That's what she used to say.
Exactly. It's true. But when you grate it, the potato is flatter and thinner, and when you put it through a food process, they're like little tubes.
Yep.
Yeah.
It becomes much more sort of like pasty, I think, when it's done.
Yeah. Now, I have to say, I don't care what kind of vegan food people eat as long as it's vegan, because it shouldn't, because I'm all about not eating animals. That's how I got on this path in the beginning. Okay, so then I got involved with other things, and I'm very into health, and I keep evolving, maybe that's not the right word, but making things healthier and healthier and healthier. Yeah. And there's an interest, you know, as we get older.
Yes. I'm aware.
And so my latkes now are not fried. They can be oil-free. I add a little oil to them. They're baked. And they're easier to make.
Mm.
But I grate them.
You have to grate them.
Have you tried an air fryer?
I was just going to say.
You know, I'm going to be talking to
the one and only J.L. Fields
in a few weeks. I have the book, and we're going to have to look into that. Yeah.
She is our fairy goat mother.
Yes, she got us started on blogging, and then she convinced us to sit down and write this crazy cookbook. She's really pushed us in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And we've broken down now and ordered an air fryer.
I think it's at our house right now.
Oh, you haven't gotten it yet.
So
exciting.
We'll have to report back and let you know how it works in the air fryer.
All right, good, yeah.
I imagine it works really well.
Yeah. Well, I use an oven.
Yeah.
And it works pretty well.
Yeah.
And I always like to say, save the oil for the lamp.
Mm-hmm.
It's my thing. Okay, the last food item I want to bring up is the blintz.
Yes.
And I think about my dad whenever he goes to the diner. And they still do. He's 89 now. And when they go to the Plainview Diner on Long Island, he always gets the cheese blintz. Mm-hmm. And he gets extra sour cream on top and sprinkles it with sugar.
Wow.
Right? I mean,
that's really impressive. If you're doing it, do it right.
But you have the vegan version of the blintz.
Yes, we do. And this was actually a friend of my family's ever since I was of conscious age or pre-conscious even. He was the first person my mom called after I was born. His name was Charles. Still is Charles. He is not dead. Every time he would come over for Passover. It was breakfast.
It was breakfast. On
after Yom Kippur, he would make cheese blintzes and potato blintzes and bring them up. And he moved down to Florida. So this was after we had gone vegan. I decided I was going to make them. Mm. And I brought them. Didn't say anything to anyone about them being vegan. I assume they would know that if we're bringing them, they'll be vegan. So we had potato and we had cheese ones. And my sister-in-law saw us eating them. I was like, wait, what are you guys eating? We're like, the blintzes. It's like,
she goes, how can you eat this? And I go, well, I'm chewing it.
And he said, because they're vegan. She's like, what do you mean? Like, do you think we would actually make and bring something that wasn't? She's like, oh, that's a really good point.
Oh, yeah,
and then
so
she had this
complete,
she had a freak out. She goes, these taste like cheese. She goes, what is it? I said, it's tofu.
Oh, no, I don't eat tofu.
And she goes, so it's a health food. And I'm like, I wouldn't go so far.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, everyone was really blown away with that one.
Yeah.
And the funny story with that is one time when I was making the potato ones, I wasn't paying attention to the milk that I was using.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, like all vegans, we have about 25 different milks in the fridge. And I just grabbed a milk. Not realizing I grabbed the vanilla.
I saw that coming.
Yeah. Mm. Anyone who's vegan knows where that one's going. So, yeah, we had vanilla potato blintzes.
I don't recommend.
Do not recommend that at all. It's a unique flavor combination. There's a reason there isn't potato ice cream.
Yet. Let's do it.
I know. Right?
A sweet potato could actually work.
Dr. McDougall would totally be behind us on
that,
right?
His potatoes.
We can do his potato
ice cream. You have to say potato.
Potato.
Ice cream if you're talking about Dr.
That's
McDougall.
That's true.
That's wonderful. Okay, for those of you who don't know what blintzes are, they're like a little crepe and filled with either a cheese filling or a savory potato filling.
Exactly.
And then if you're being really decadent, you might top it with sour cream and extra sugar.
Or jam.
Or blueberry sauce.
Blueberries, yeah.
We do that.
Sure. Mm, bringing me back.
Yeah.
Okay. I just have to add in here, I don't know if there are other cookbooks coming.
They're in the works.
There might be.
But, you know, we like to have the foods from our upbringing. It's important.
Mm-hmm.
My partner, Gary, he's Italian. You know, he does all the Italian stuff. It's great. And then, you know, I kick in with a lot of the Jewish stuff. So I just want you to know that I have made a vegan gefilte fish.
Wow.
It's pretty good. And my mom actually came up with the best vegan chopped liver I've ever had. She's got 3 vegan kids, and she came up with chopped liver. So grandma's chopped liver is pretty amazing. 3 ingredients.
Amazing.
We actually just made our version of one the other day. It's my lunchtime. It's my afternoon snack at the office.
Nice. And, you know, everybody's mom and grandmother's chopped liver was different.
Yes.
And always the best, of course, until I like my mom's.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's a good one. And then Hamantaschen.
Oh, I love Hamantaschen.
Yeah, I make a gluten-free Hamantaschen.
Whoa.
Yeah,
wow.
It's pretty good. Anyway. So there you go. I love food.
So do I.
Yeah.
It's what brings us together.
I thought that was music that brings the people together.
Anyway, New York City is the greatest city in the world.
It is.
Isn't it?
It is the center of the world.
And I think the best vegan food is here in New York City.
I think we have such a wide variety of it in New York City. That's why in the back of the book we actually listed, at the time this went to press, so if your restaurant
dynamic,
is not on there, we're sorry.
Yeah, it keeps changing.
We tried to list every single 100% vegan restaurant in New York City. In the course of doing this, we learned that Staten Island, one of the five boroughs, has no vegan restaurants.
The well, red Staten
no
Island.
Vegan. No all vegan.
Has no all vegan restaurants.
Because it's red. It's the red borough.
It is.
That's okay. Have you been to Green Zenfany?
No.
Forest Hills, my neighborhood. It's actually Rego Park next door. It's amazing.
That's
Green
an easy
Zenfany.
Drive.
We will have to check that out.
Yeah, it's good. Wendy, the owner, she had somewhere upstate New York, like Hudson Valley somewhere, it was Green Melody, I think, and then it was on Long Island, Green Harmony, and now it's Green Zenfany, but it's really quite
nice.
Good.
I like
yeah.
that.
All right, what's do you have a favorite restaurant?
Oh, favorite restaurant.
Yeah.
Ooh, we're friends with like, a lot of the restaurant owners in the city,
yes.
so we could get in trouble if we pick one or the other.
I will say that my all-time, like, just go to it always is probably going to be Candle 79
of
for
course.
Absolutely.
And Candle Cafe.
I love
West
candles.
Or 79,
but
yeah.
But I'm kind of infatuated nowadays with Delisa and Saracen, the French restaurant in the West Village.
I've heard different things about that restaurant.
Oh,
I haven't
amazing.
Been there yet.
I am absolutely, and I think it's because I came to French food very late in life because most of it wasn't kosher, blah, blah, blah. And you actually really got me into French food. And then just a few years later, I went vegan and I was like, well, there went that.
There that.
And as it turns out, no, it's right here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's delicious.
That's right. Mm. Well, I was cooking French vegan food when I lived in France for myself. I learned there. It was fun because I would eat with other French people in the restaurants and see what they were eating, and then
go home.
And can I do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't notice any aquafaba in this cookbook.
That's right.
Is there a reason for that?
It's just not something we've really used that much of. And because at the time when we were doing all these recipes.
There was our publisher, Vegan Heritage Press, actually had published
Zuzu's
aquafaba.
And so I was like, wow, do we really need to read?
Zuzu.
Yeah.
Is it like Zsa-Zsa, Zuzu? Yeah.
Zudiver, yeah. I was like, do we really need to reinvent the wheel? She's already done that.
Right, yeah.
That's why we want, if there's something that calls for I'm a fan of energy egg replacer when I'm eating
it.
Egg. But you know what? My feeling is if you don't want to use that, you want to use aquafaba, great. You know how to use that. If you'd rather use a flax egg in your stuff, great.
Have choices.
What I love telling people when they say, oh, hey, is it okay if I leave this out? I'm not in the kitchen looking over your shoulder.
You're not the culinary cop?
I am not the culinary cop. I'm not the vegan police.
It's your food. Eat it. Enjoy
do it.
Do it
how you want to do it. Make it yours. Use our recipes as a template. Just as long as you're in the kitchen cooking and cooking with plants, I'm happy.
I hear you. It's fun, though, the way people need permission.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. But we want to liberate all of you. Liberate your creativity in the kitchen and create something new and celebrate. Do you have a favorite in your cookbook?
There are a couple. So, again, that's like one of the pick your favorite child.
Sophie's choice. that's awful, right?
I'm definitely partial to the General Tso's not chicken. In the book, we do it with seitan, also give a suggestion for doing it with soy curls.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a preference for doing it with soy curls.
Mm. Yeah, they actually, that's grown on me. I actually like them better with soy curls too. And that's a gluten-free option as well.
All right, I haven't made this, but I think this is my favorite and I'm going to go for it. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know how to pronounce
it. Avgolemono.
The avgolemono.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's Greek style chicken lemon soup.
Yeah, I'm just licking the page.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
That's kind of celebrating Astoria, which is the Greek center of New York.
I love just walking around. I don't know if you've ever done this. Walked around Queens, for example, and you go from country to country.
Yeah.
The languages change. The food changes. You can tour the world in several hours on 5 feet. It's amazing.
It's very much so.
And you said in the book over 800 languages are spoken in New York City, and most of them are in Queens, right?
I would say probably the majority.
Probably the majority.
Yeah.
We've got 3 minutes left.
Wow.
I'm getting the three.
Wow.
How did we do that? Because we love talking about food.
Yes. Me too. Get a bunch of vegans together. What do they talk about?
Okay, so you're the Vegan Mose.
Yes.
We are.
And where do we find you?
Oh, you can find us at veganmose.com, veganmose.com.
And what's going on at veganmose.com?
We are sharing recipes for easy to make vegan food in your own home.
A little bit of thought pieces about sort of different aspects of animal rights, and maybe the intersection with gay rights.
Yeah, and you can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all Vegan Mose, and we do have a Pinterest page as well, but we don't really pin.
Do people pin?
I don't understand Pinterest. It confuses me.
Well, I use Pinterest, and I'm not that big with Instagram. I know Instagram can be a big thing, but you can't link.
No.
And that just bugs
it's annoying.
Me.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to give a recipe, for example, you know, too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why when we do it, when we put something, a recipe up on Instagram, or when we put out a recipe, we'll put it on all our social media at the same time. And for Instagram, we have to say recipe link in bio, and then people have to go up to our bio, and we have to change it whenever we change the recipe.
It's tedious.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So much more.
so much more.
Cutting and pasting.
Vegan issues.
All right. Well, look at that. We've come to the end. Michael Suchman and Ethan Cement.
Yes.
Simon.
Simon. In French, yes.
Ethan Simon. I like making everything French. It just sounds French. Okay, NYC Vegan, iconic recipes for a taste of the Big Apple, a fun book to read, fun food to eat. Thank you for putting this together. Guys, such a pleasure to meet you.
It was a pleasure meeting
you here today.
Likewise.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you've been listening to It's All About Food, and maybe you've been watching us live streaming here on our new live streaming thing going on here. Really fun. Just remember, folks, have a delicious week.